Welcome to The Feast Life, where we empower you, the modern homeschool mom, to create a life and homeschool you love, one founded on faith, family, freedom, and fun. I'm your host, Julie Ross, creator of the award-winning homeschool curriculum, A Gentle Feast, and a certified Christian life coach. For more information on today's episode and to access my free gift for you, check out thefeastlife.me. Charlotte Mason once said, life should be all living, not a mere tedious passing of time. So on this show, we seek to savor the feast of life. Girl, grab your favorite beverage and pull up a chair. You are welcome at this table. Are fairy tales just for bedtime, or do they hold the key to unlocking a child's creativity and wonder? On this episode of The Feast Life, I sat down with Melody Trowell, a professor at Dallas Christian College and author of a captivating new children's book, to discuss why fairy tales are more than just stories. They're essential tools for education and personal growth. Don't miss this inspiring conversation about fostering creativity, embracing childlike wonder, and teaching children to think freely in an often rigid educational system. Hear firsthand from a freshman college English professor what children really need to be doing in order to prepare themselves for college English. Let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to The Feast Life. I'm your host, Julie Ross, and I am here today with Melody Trowell, and we are going to be talking about all things English,
yes,
fairy tales, all the fun stuff. Melody, you are currently a professor at Dallas Christian College, is that?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so make sure I said it right. Okay, I'm like, is it college or university? I had to question myself here.
We're powerful, but we're tiny.
Just to kick off here, just tell everyone a little bit about yourself and what you're currently doing.
Okay. I am originally from Abilene, Texas, West Texas girl, living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I've been teaching English writing for about 20 years at my particular college at Dallas Christian for roughly 15. There's been a couple years there where I came home after having my twins to be home for a while with just them. And then the Lord sent me back to work. So I've been there for a long time teaching freshman composition mostly. And then a couple of, every now and then I get a creative writing class or a children's lit class. And those are my really fun semesters. But I have three kids. I've been married for 20 years. And I just had my first book published.
So exciting. So yeah, so let's talk about that for a second. So you wrote a children's book.
Yeah.
And the title of it is The Girl Whose Frown Shook the Ground, which is a very unique title.
Yeah.
What kind of inspired that title and that story?
It's funny. I thought my publisher would change the title because it's so long, but she didn't. And there was just absolutely no question about it whatsoever. And it's funny because that's always the first thing people say is, oh, what an interesting title. I was in a season of reading a whole bunch of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and George MacDonald. And I was actually at one of my oldest son's swim meets volunteering at the sign-in table, and the meet was going on. My job was over. I had to wait till it ended to sign.
Yeah, those things go on forever and
ever. Yeah, but it was a great chance to grade papers and read. Mm. So I was sitting there reading George MacDonald's The Lost Princess.
Yeah.
And I finished the book and just felt this inspiration wash over me. Mm. And I grabbed a piece of paper from the swim meet stuff, like information that nobody needed anymore, and flipped it over. And I just wrote The Girl Whose Frown Shook the Ground. And all these notes, I still have that piece of paper, just all these ideas for a story that just came spilling out.
Wow.
That's how it came about.
Yeah. Very much divine inspiration, it sounds. And
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And what happens too, when you feed your mind with living ideas, like
Yep.
Lewis and McDonald in these wonderful stories, and all those stories can lead to further ideas and further inspiration. And that you have that kind of fertile soil for those ideas to spring out of, which is really cool. And that's one of the
Yes.
things I'm a huge proponent of in my curriculum, is just reading these kinds of stories to children. It's not a waste of time, and we should be pursuing STEM more academic, like these ideas. You never know when they're going to take root and lead to something else later on, or change their character, or change them as a person. So can you talk a little bit just about fairy tales in general, and kind of how you've maybe incorporated them in your life and in your reading journey, but then also as a teacher?
Yeah, I am a person of childlike faith and wonder just by nature. Realizing that in my 40s, I started coming to that awareness in my 30s, really, when so I had kids and I was seeing things through their eyes and realizing that's how I see everything all the time.
That's
And
awesome.
that was different from a lot of people around me. It was interesting, particularly when COVID hit, of course, we all had our own little epiphanies. Mine was that this was how I was made, and it was a good thing, and that God had a purpose for that. So I was with my kids because we were all home. I was teaching at home. My husband was working at home. My kids were schooling at home for the first time, which is something I had prayed for years, and COVID enabled that. So I was seeing their curriculum every day, every detail, kind of for the first time. And I was reading with them more than I had been before because we had time. And it just fed, like you said, it fed that fuel, that desire, that imagination, that wonder. And I was like, oh, this is something that I felt had died off, you know, in my adulthood, in my career, my job, you know. And it reawakened during COVID because I had time and I had space to just sit. And so reading with my kids, George MacDonald and Lewis, and then I had time to just go outside and sit and start writing myself. It just reawakened this thing that I thought had just died off and was, oh, this is just a childlike thing that is over, but it wasn't. So I hope that answers your question.
Is it Lewis or McDonald? I always mix them up. The quote about any good children's book can also be read as an adult. I'm totally butchering the
Lewis,
quote.
yes.
Okay, what's the quote?
Yeah, that's Lewis. Yeah, that's Lewis. Any good children's book worth reading is worth reading as an adult. I think it's something like
Yes. Okay,
that.
we got the
Yeah, and he wrote a letter to, I think it was his niece, saying maybe one day you'll be old enough to read fairy tales again.
Again, yes. Yes,
Yes, I
that's
love
what I've been
that.
thinking about. And that's what's such beautiful about getting to homeschool, is like you do get to read these things that you might have read them as a child, but there's been so many years, and like you're saying, our lifestyle doesn't really cultivate awe and wonder on a regular basis, right? But then reading them as an adult to your children, you get to see it through their eyes for the first time, and it's such a wonderful gift and privilege that we have to give that to our kids. I'm going to read the introductory letter here that I love for the book. It says, is that okay? Okay. Hello, beloved. It pleasures me immensely to be writing this letter to you, for I so often get caught up in the story that time has fled too quickly, leaving no space for this important pleasantry. Now, before you embark on the adventure herein, which I have tasked to report to you, I ask of you only one small thing. Crumple up, toss out, and flat out forget, if even temporarily, all notions of logic and making sense. True, they are vital to living, but not within the world of these pages. For helper tales, real ones, are fantasies that apprehend more than cool reason ever comprehends, or so I've read. And then in the footnote, you put, this line, beloved, comes from the bard himself, William Shakespeare, as spoken in his play A Midsummer Night's Dream, which bears a similar setting to our story. Although I must say, the helpers of Master Shakespeare's tale were rather unhelpful. I quite wonder if he didn't get the story wrong, or if he had not indeed met the helpers at all. So I love this. It does very much remind me of Lewis and the way that he addresses the children and talks directly to them. So what do you mean by helper tales?
Tales that reveal the spirit realm. Tales that reveal, some people call it magic. Some people call it spiritual. Some people call it the divine. I call it what do I call it? It's connecting us back to Eden. It's connecting us back to how we were created in the first place before the fall, the way things are meant to be, bringing heaven down to earth kind of thing. What Lewis calls it, the low door. And the door is so low that you have to bend over and be as small as a child to get in. From my brief time on this planet so far, realizing that the only way that we can really understand who we are, where we come from, why we're here, is to be childlike and to crawl through that low door, like Lewis says. So, yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, I had never heard it called that before. You think fantasy books, fairy tales, things like that, but not a helper tale. And I didn't realize that's what
the helper is another word for the Holy Spirit in scripture. And for some people, those who aren't familiar with scripture, maybe haven't ever read the Bible, don't know that. Maybe it's just like Mr. Rogers always said, look for the helpers in troubled times. It's just that some people call it the goodness that they're looking for. Someone who's just, I don't know, different from the rest, offering a different perspective, seeing through a different lens. For me, that's the Holy Spirit. For someone else, it might be, I don't know, somebody else that has different kind of vision, that wonder, that awe, you know?
Yeah. Most hero tales, not necessarily fairy tales, but in that kind of hero's journey, there always is a helper. There always is somebody that guides the hero or the heroine to on that journey. So in this story, though, you actually do call it the helper. And is it, were you being allegorical? Is it taking on that Lewis or McDonald bringing in the faith into the story?
Yes. Short answer, yes. Yeah. I had written her as the fairy first.
Okay.
She was the fairy forever and ever as I was writing. And I got the sense that some readers might associate that too much with this ethereal magic that really has no teeth and it has no meaning. It is not really intentional. And I needed her to be more embodied than just a fairy, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I changed. Actually, my husband had the idea. I was thinking, what else could I call her? That's not. And he said, well, what about the helper? That's another name for Holy Spirit. And I was like, oh my word. Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, that really comes through. So what ages would you recommend your book for?
My publisher says 5 to 11, which makes sense. And I've had a bunch of people say they think it's going to be great for reading aloud to their younger kids who can't read to themselves yet. And then older kids, like fourth graders, tend to really like this story. Nice. And then I hope that it sticks with people even as they get older and kind of stays as a nostalgic read. Like, not that I'm on par with Lewis and Tolkien and like that. It sticks around like that.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you didn't travel to Oxford to write this, did you?
No. I wish. No, never been. One day, maybe. Oh.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It really is. I was like, I was talking to someone about this actually a couple days ago, and I was like, I think if I lived there, I really could write an awesome children's book because it is so stunning.
Yeah, I know.
All the history and just the whole atmosphere is truly incredible, incredible.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit just about the importance of parents reading these kind of stories to bring that awe and wonder into their life. Are there any other particular kind of stories other than Lewis or McDonald that you would recommend parents read to their kids or incorporate, or other than your book, of course?
Oh, they need Walter Wangren Jr.
Okay. I have never heard of this. And so going on Amazon right after we're done.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to do that. I didn't think ahead to grab. I don't even know where they are right now. But Walter Wangren Jr. he's passed now, but he is a fairy tale author. He was a minister as well. And he believed the same thing I do, that children see the world differently. And he wrote these fairy tales and didn't treat the children like... He wasn't too pedantic. He didn't speak down to them in his writing. he left room for them to think and wonder and question. And he would use some big words every now and then because he knew they could figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same thing, not dumbing it down, not speaking yes. down to them, respecting them.
Yes.
So definitely Walter Wengren Jr.
Okay. Yes. I'm very fascinated by this. You can send me a link and we'll put it in the show notes for this because yeah, never heard of this person now and could go on a whole rabbit trail.
Oh yeah.
Which I appreciate. So yes. And we'll put the link to your book too, because parents are really going to want to check it out. It's a really beautiful, cool. sweet story. So let's talk
it right here if you want.
Oh,
to.
Oh yes, I do. And you could totally tell you're an English teacher by the bookshelves in the background. Do you have a favorite book?
That question. That's really hard, right?
Okay. What's your favorite book right now?
A Christmas Carol. A Christmas Carol. Okay. It is one of my top favorite books any time of the year, but especially now because we're doing this around Christmas time, of course. But Dickens does this thing where he blends the spirit realm with the physical realm, which is something my heart longs to see and to show people, is that it's happening at the same time and we just can't see it all the time, but kids can. They know it's there. So he does that. I love that. And I love the length that he writes that book. He leaves just enough for you to wonder and question and awe, and doesn't tell you how to interpret everything. And he's just a great wordsmith, which I very much appreciate, is the wording.
Yeah. So this is cool. I took my kids up to Boston for like a field trip a couple of weeks ago, and we went to Salem and we were on this like night tour and we heard this like screaming, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what's happening? And the tour guides, it's okay. It's okay. They do a traveling Christmas carol. So they have a trolley. Wow. And one guy is dressed up like Dickens, and he's telling the story to the people on the trolley, and they go to different stops throughout the town. And so we were next to the spot where the ghost of the future comes.
Okay. Terrifying.
I'm screaming. Yeah. And you can hear the Dickens guy going, oh, what did he keep saying? It was some line about, I didn't realize. He was so in character. And like all these other people were just getting on the trolley and we're just walking by, and he just kept going, I didn't realize. And I was like, okay, that would be so cool to see that show in this like weird, spooky town setting out in the open like that and travel. I've never heard of any traveling play before.
Me neither. Not since Shakespeare, right?
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah, but the audience is the one I'm like, what an amazing concept. Okay.
Oh, so that's neat.
My little rabbit trail there. Well, let's transition here to talking about, as a writer of a homeschool curriculum, one of the questions I get asked and one of the concerns of parents all the time is preparing their child for college, especially English. Yes. So since you teach freshman composition, this is a perfect question for you. What are you seeing? As the professor of newer students that have been coming in, and what can parents do to help prepare their kids for that?
Okay. I am seeing fear, especially since COVID, but it started happening before then. I've been teaching writing for 20 years now, but I'm seeing a lot of fear that my students are afraid of doing it wrong.
Wrong. Wow.
And they're very focused on the form of the essay rather than the content. And so I'm trying to strip away the fear, creating safe spaces for thinking. Flannery O'Connor said, I don't know what I think until I read what I've written. It's very true. So what parents can do is, and it's really hard, I know, let them write and don't comment on, oh, this is misspelled, this is a fragment, or you need MLA here. Just let them write and ask them questions, because questions help them think. And when you can think in a safe place where you feel like, even if I'm wrong, it's going to be okay and I'll figure it out later, then you can write well.
Today's episode is brought to you by A Gentle Feast. A Gentle Feast offers a complete living books curriculum, an award-winning early reading program, and more tools to equip you to apply Charlotte Mason's timeless philosophy into your modern homeschool. Go to agentlefeast.com to check it out. Smooth and easy days are closer than you think. Wow, that is huge. That's so important. And that's like what I have in my curriculum, because Charlotte Mason was big on narration. So letting the students say back what they're thinking, but then as they get older, start putting that into writing and not correcting it and not even teaching them formal composition until high school.
Yeah.
Because she wanted them to have the time to develop their ideas, to develop their voice. And then you can teach them the formatting, but it doesn't stifle the voice. And I used to teach public school. I taught fifth grade, and it was all about the 5-paragraph essay. And it was all about copying this form. And you're saying, this is the right way. This is the wrong way. That's not an adverb. And this isn't spelled right. And it was like you're saying, you don't even want to try. You're so afraid that I'm going to fail and get it wrong. And then you don't have a voice because you have been fitting your voice into this format and not being able to express your own thinking. Like you're saying, wow, that is really powerful.
Yeah. I'm seeing my students coming in saying either I've never written an essay.
Wow.
Because everything is being shortened now. Or I've written essays, but my teacher always gave me the outline and said, write this essay according to this outline. Mm-hmm. And while I understand that is helpful in those early years to help them learn how to structure
the formatting. Yeah.
There's a time where that needs to stop and they need to start creating their own outlines to think. So that the thinking, they're not being afraid to think and question.
Yeah. So how do you overcompensate? What do you do about that fear? Like, how do you get them to try? Yeah.
The overall answer is loving them, which looks different for each student in each class and each semester, asking them a lot of questions and helping them feel safe. Structuring the physical space of my classroom as best as I can control into small groups at tables where I go around and sit next to them and talk and ask questions. And they feel a little bit safer because they don't have to talk in front of the whole class. And quite honestly, because I'm at a Christian school, I can pray with them.
Yeah.
And I pray over them while they're writing often. Silently, but loving them and asking a lot of questions and letting them know there's no right answer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. And I tell parents that all the time. It's just take your kid out to Starbucks and ask them questions about what they're reading. That's how adults talk about books. It doesn't have to be like, we're going to analyze it to death. And
what did you notice? That's the question. That's the question I always ask them in comp two, when we read a lot of literature. I let them, they read, they come to class, they sit, and I give them 20 minutes to quick write about what they read. And the question that they need to answer in this quick write is, what did you notice? That's it. And a lot of them don't really know. They're searching for that. What does she want me to notice?
Yeah, yeah. What's the right answer?
That's not it, y'all. And if you notice that you don't understand this story and you don't like it and it's confusing, that's what you say.
Yeah.
And then we'll try to figure out why.
Yeah. And I think oftentimes too, like even homeschooling, sometimes the kids, they don't feel safe enough to be messy or be honest. And so it's as a homeschool parent, even asking yourself that question, am I creating a space? I think you mentioned like the physical setup, that's super important, but am I making a space where it's okay to just go, I have no idea what I just read.
Yeah. Oh, and I do that. And you have to model that, right? As a parent and as a teacher, I read my students one of my essays and it's not perfect. And I print it out and I read it out loud and we talk about what they liked and what they didn't. And they don't know it's me. And I say, this is not great here or whatever. And then at the end, I tell them, that's me. So they know, it's okay.
That's great. And I think it's, great. We should be writing and reading ourselves so that we can have empathy and relate to our children and their reading and writing process as well, and have those
Yeah.
shared kind of conversations, even if we're not, they're older and we're not reading to them anymore. I think that's a really great idea. I had to write a chapter for a book. It's, I think, coming out in February. I'm really excited about it. But I literally, like, the deadline was coming. You know what
Yes.
this is like, the deadline's coming, the deadline's coming. And I just would like stare at the blank little cursor thing. And I'm like, what am I doing? Why do I feel like I can't even think about what I should put on the paper?
Yeah.
And I was like, finally, the night before, got inspired. And I was like, Julie, you know how to talk.
Yeah.
Just talk. And so I literally just recorded myself talking about the topic, and
Yeah.
then got the transcript and put that, and then organized that into like the
That's perfect.
chapter. But it's, this is what we're asking our kids to do, but you have to be able to like just think first and not worry about, I was like, I need a strong hook. How do I start out? You know, like
Oh yeah.
all like the
I
college English stuff was coming back.
Yes. Oh yeah, start in the middle. Start in the middle. I that's
Start in the
another
middle. I like
thing.
that.
My students, they do that. They're like, "I need a hook." I'm like, "No, you
Yeah.
don't. You
Because
need
we've
a
been trained.
bottom."
This is what
Yeah.
you,
Do the intro last. Yeah.
That's good. Okay, so we can't have a conversation about English without talking about the elephant in the room and how it's really going to change English and
AI.
how we teach. Yeah, you knew what I was going to talk about, right? Because it's, this is impacting, I feel like, English more than anything else. But what you're
Yes.
talking about of getting students that can actually think, AI cannot do that. But it
Right.
can write a very formulaic five paragraph essay. And so this kind of format driven writing is gonna go because anybody can do it with a click of a button now, but it
Right.
can never replace the thinking. So that's something we need to encourage. But how has that kind of impacted you as a teacher? What are you seeing in your classroom? That kind of thing.
It's taken the place of plagiarism, like the old school plagiarism, where people, my students would like go to a website and copy a paper and whatever. And I can easily detect that because I always have them handwrite their stuff in class so I can get to know them first. And then when I do switch over into Word docs or Google docs, I can tell this isn't you. And so I used to be able to Google a phrase or a sentence and find where they plagiarized that from specifically. And then about 3 years ago, I couldn't do it anymore. I could detect that it wasn't them, but I couldn't find where they got it from. And that's when I found out about ChatGPT. So I knew something's wrong here. So what I'm doing is I'm going back to paper. I'm eliminating the distraction that they get from whatever's popping up on their computers. And I'm allowing them, again, it's that space to freely think and mess up. And it will physically look messy because they're having to handwrite it and they're not used to that. Some of them love it, though. And I get to show them with their physical bodies how to move things around, draw arrows, scratch stuff out. It should look messy. Writing is messy because you don't know what you think until you start getting it out, and then you question it, and then you move it around, and then we shift papers around the table and they look at each other's. As much as I can, I write it in my syllabus. AI is the same thing as plagiarism because you're getting ideas from somewhere else and you're not crediting it, so to speak. And I know some professors allow usage of AI depending on the class, as long as they can cite it. I don't even want to do that. I want to give them the room to think, to question, because if they have that, and for some of them, this is the very first time they've ever been allowed to do that, to give them that space.
And I think you make a really good point that, like, if the pressure has always been there that there's only one right way and you have to get it right, then I don't want to say cheating, but
Right.
shortcuts like that become a means to an end.
And it's often it's out of desperation because they don't know what to do because they've not been given that opportunity to mess up, acknowledge the mess up, given space and time to fix the mess up, and then it's theirs. then they own that idea. Oh, I know what I know now.
Yeah, it's so powerful. Do you think it can be used at all in English class?
That's a really tough question for me, and I've been dealing with this question, tug of war back and forth. I have a professor friend who uses it to produce poorly written essays, and then her students will edit them.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess
Yeah.
you can do it that way. You can have it write something and then you can edit it and say, here's where it should be fixed and here's where this is sounds robotic and I want to add my voice here. So you can use it like an editing thing, a tool, editing tool. I'm staying away from it
Yeah.
personally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just think, I know some people liken it to the calculator in math.
Or the internet, I've heard.
Right, or
Yeah.
the internet. Yeah. So I'm a child of the 90s when
Yeah,
that
me
all
too.
started and we could Google things for the first time and I'm sure my
Was
teachers
like,
were
oh.
yeah, like coming up with ideas even. Just the fact that my students, when I say I want you to write an expository essay over a topic that either you know a lot about, so you want to write about it, or it's something you don't know about and you want to learn about it. Right? And they've never been given the chance to choose their own topic.
Wow.
They literally don't even know what to choose. So
Yeah,
they'll go to Google or they'll go to AI and they'll say expository essay topics. And I'm like, no, I want you.
Yeah, like, where do I even start? And it's funny because I tell my kids too, I'm like, you don't know how lucky you have it. I was like, the internet literally came out when I was in college. So I still had to go to the library and I'm like Hermione and Harry Potter, and I had a stack of books this big looking for one quote on one topic that I had to cite and do all this stuff.
Using the
I was
card
like,
catalog.
yeah, you get the answer or the quote you need in 5 seconds. There's no excuse for why this paper should not be filled with amazingness.
This should be the best thing you've ever written every time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I do have a niece who uses it, who uses, I don't know what specifically she uses. Is it ChatGPT or something else? But she uses AI to help her with citations.
Oh, I didn't know it
So
could do that.
it can do that,
Like you put in the
apparently.
book and have it create,
The
because that's always
MLA
a
format or whatever. Yeah,
that
which
is
is
always a pain, I must
I
admit.
understand that. Like, I have over the years slowly gotten away from making them figure it all out because I'm trying to get them broken free of this fear of failure. So I'm like, let's not worry about the citations. Let's let the internet help us with that. Citation machine or EasyBib
Yeah.
or something. We'll start with that because I just need them to think and I need them to feel free to think.
Yeah. No, it's really great that you've hit on that because I feel like that is the key and that is something that's never going to be replaced. And I think it's going back to what education has been all along, but in our industrialized information age, it became all about facts and systems and, you know,
Production.
input, output, yes, production. And then we realize, oh, a computer can actually do that now. But it can never take away, like, what, going back to where we started our conversation in the book that you wrote, it can never go away from the God story, wonder, awe that is put inside
The
of us.
fairy tale of all fairy
Yes.
tales, which our fairy tales point to. That's the whole point. Yeah. Oh, did you know this? I learned this last year that fairy tales were originally written for adults.
Like the
And
Grimm Brothers kind of thing. Okay.
those are a little bit different because those are more like folk tales because
Yeah,
the
and those are
people,
pretty
anyways.
terrifying. If you read the
But
originals, you're
oh, I
like,
know they are terrifying, which I kind of love, honestly. I love the weird stuff. But fairy tales were originally written for adults and they were to direct us to Christ. So if you think about it, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, you think of fairy tales, Cinderella, there is always a savior. There is a knight in shining armor, there is a prince, there is a dude helping the damsel in distress, the woodcutter in the original Little Red Riding Hood who comes in and saves them before Andrew Lang cut him out, right? That's Christ. That's the whole point of the fairy tale.
Yeah, and I definitely got that from your story. I feel like it, because that's why I asked you. I'm like, is it allegorical? and you listen like George MacDonald's tales, and it's, oh, okay, I can see it overlaps that, but it's part of that, what you're saying, like the fairy tales and the original purpose, going back to that. So yeah, so do you have any closing words or encouragement for families to wrap up our episode?
To the parents specifically, I guess I would say don't be afraid to be childlike.
Beautiful.
Don't be afraid to be different. This is the thing that makes me choke up. Don't be afraid to be different from the other parents that are maybe in your cohort or wherever y'all are schooling together. Be childlike and don't be afraid to show it. Don't be afraid to feel weird. I've carried that around in my classroom some, where I'm afraid to show how excited I am to read this C.S. Lewis poem because none of my students have ever read it before. And I can't be like that anymore because it's not obedient to the Lord. He's called you to something. So don't be afraid to go all in on that because somebody, your child or their friend or another parent, somebody is going to see that and say, that is beautiful. I
I
want a
love
piece of
that.
that.
Yeah. And it
So,
inspires your children too, because God has made
absolutely.
them 100% unique. And so seeing you be fully alive and fully yourself and having that childlike faith and that awe and wonder and pursuing the passions that God has put on your heart will inspire them as well. So those are some beautiful closing words. So I will put the link to your book. And is there anywhere else that you would like people to come find you?
MelodyTroll.com.
Awesome. I'll put all
Yeah.
that in the show notes. So thank you so much.
Awesome.
This was a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Let's wrap up with some key takeaways. Number one, fairy tales foster creativity. Melody shared how fairy tales inspire children to think imaginatively and develop creative solutions to problems by engaging with symbolic and fantastical elements. Number two, childlike wonder is essential. Maintaining a sense of wonder isn't just for children. It's a mindset that enriches education, creativity, and personal growth for learners of all ages. Number three, storytelling is powerful. Stories shape how children see the world and themselves. Fairy tales, in particular, teach lessons about resilience, hope, and morality in ways that resonate deeply. Number four, education needs to be beyond the box. Melody discussed the importance of giving students space to explore ideas freely, make mistakes, be messy, and find their own voices in their writing without the fear of failure. And finally, we touched on balancing AI and human expression. While AI tools can be helpful, Melody emphasizes the need to focus on developing students' critical thinking and personal expression to preserve the human element in education. Again, thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you join me next time on The Feast Life. There, Julie Ross here. I just wanted to say thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like this show, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a positive review in iTunes. This really does help people learn about the podcast. And each month, I will pick a winner to receive a free gift. Don't forget to check out all the free resources we created for you at thefeastlife.me. Thank you.